ます。
Yeah, I'm hungry. Whose lotus feet? Abhidhyana. Thinking of. At every second. Samadhi. Trance. Dhautaya. Being washed off. Dhyaya. By such clean intelligence. Anupashyanti, the sea by following authorities. He certainly, Tatvam, the absolute truth, Atmana, of the Supreme Lord and of oneself. Vadanti, they say. Cha, also. Etat, this. Kavayaha, philosophers or learned scholars. Yataharucham, as he thinks. Saha, he. May, mine. Mukundaha, Lord Krishna, who gives liberation. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Prasidatam, be pleased with me. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. It is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who gives liberation. By thinking of his lotus feet at every second, following in the footsteps of authorities, the devotee in trance can see the absolute truth. The learned mental speculators, however, think of him according to their whims. May the Lord be pleased with me. Please repeat after me. It is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who gives liberation. By thinking of his lotus feet at every second, following in the footsteps of authorities, the devotee in trance can see the absolute truth. The learned mental speculators, however, think of him according to their whims. May the Lord be pleased with me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The mystic yogis, after a strenuous effort to control the senses, may be situated in a trance of yoga, just to have a vision of the super soul within everyone. But the pure devotee, simply by remembering the Lord's lotus feet at every second, at once becomes established in real trance, because by such realization his mind and intelligence are completely cleansed of the diseases of material enjoyment. The pure devotee thinks himself fallen into the ocean of birth and death and incessantly prays to the Lord to lift him up. He only aspires to become a speck of transcendental dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. The pure devotee, by the grace of the Lord, absolutely loses all attraction for material enjoyment, and to keep free from contamination, he always thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord. King Kulashekar, a great devotee of the Lord, prayed, Krishna Twadiya Panka Pankaja Panjarantam Adhyayva Me Vishatu Manasa Rajahamsa Prana Prayana Samye Kapavata Pitai Kanta Varudhana Vidho Smaranam Kutaste. My Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stems of your of the lotus feet of your lordship and be locked in their network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with cough, how will it be possible to think of you? There's an intimate relationship between the swan and the lotus stem. So the comparison is very appropriate. Without becoming a swan or Paramahamsa, one cannot enter into the network of the lotus feet of the Lord. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, the mental speculators, even by dint of learned scholarship, cannot even dream of the absolute truth by speculating over it for eternity. The Lord reserves the right for not being exposed to such mental speculators. And because they cannot enter into the network stem of the lotus feet of the Lord, all mental speculators differ in conclusions, and at the end, they make a useless compromise by saying, as so many conclusions, as many ways, according to one's own inclination, yatha rucham. But the Lord is not like a shopkeeper trying to please all sorts of customers in the mental speculator exchange. The Lord is what He is, the absolute personality of Godhead, and He demands absolute surrender unto Him only. The pure devotee, however, by following the ways of previous acharyas or authorities, can see the Supreme Lord through the transparent medium of a bona fide spiritual master. Anupashyanti. The pure devotee never tries to see the Lord by mental speculation, but by following in the footsteps of the acharyas. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. I filled it up too high. Therefore, there is no difference of conclusions amongst the Vaishnavacharyas regarding the Lord and the devotee. Lord Chaitanya asserts that the living entity, Jiva, is eternally the servitor of the Lord, and that he is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. This tattva of Lord Chaitanya's is shared by all four sampradayas of the Vaishnava school, all accepting eternal servitude of the Lord even after salvation. And there is no authorized Vaishnavacharya who may think of the Lord and himself as one. This humbleness of the pure devotee, who is 100% engaged in his service, puts a devotee of the Lord in a trance by which to realize everything. Because to the sincere devotee of the Lord reveals himself, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10:10. The Lord, being the Lord of intelligence in everyone, even of the non-devotee, favors his devotee with proper intelligence, so that automatically the pure devotee is enlightened with the factual truth about the Lord and his different energies. The Lord is revealed not by one's speculative power or by one's verbal jugglery over the absolute truth. Rather, he reveals himself to a devotee when he is fully satisfied by the devotee service attitude. Shukadev Goswami is not a mental speculator or a compromiser of the theory of as many ways, as many conclusions. Rather, he prays to the Lord only, invoking his transcendental pleasure. That is the way of knowing the Lord. Amagyana timbrandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshuruvam vitamina tasvam sri gurudanyama. I was born to the darkest of Indus, but my spiritual master did not have the approach to knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So in this verse, Vyasadeva explains how we can see the Lord. The goal, the prayojana, is to be able to see Krishna, to see the Lord. That is done by first establishing a relationship, the sambandha, with the Guru, and through the Guru, through the previous acharyas, which ultimately leads to Krishna. And with this relationship, then comes responsibility. A disciple is only a person who follows the discipline. So that's the abhideya. What must be done once the relationship is established to achieve the goal? Right? Those three things have now been established. So by having a connection with the Guru, this allows the process to happen, because we don't know anything about Krishna except through, in our case, except through Srila Prabhupada. There's no, what do we know about Krishna? We don't know anything about Krishna. When we didn't even know how to clean our behinds, but it wasn't for the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. We don't know anything. There is one incident in the life of Ramanujacharya that indicates this. One time, Ramanujacharya and all his disciples were having a darshan of Sri Ranganath. So all the disciples, like everybody, were all standing there in front of the altar, except one of his disciples had his back to the deity and was looking at Ramanujacharya like this. And everybody's looking like, what's with him, you know? Did he get up on a, and what's his problem? And so finally Ramanujacharya says, what are you doing? He says, I don't know the Lord. All I know is you. So I'm looking at you. Because what do I know about him? I don't know, all I know is you. Whatever I know comes from you, so therefore I'm looking at you. What else? So then Ramanujacharya appreciated the mood of the devotee. That actually the only link that we have with Krishna is through the Guru. Krishna himself said in the Adi Purana that he who says he is my devotee, he is not my devotee. But he who is the devotee of my devotee, he is actually my devotee. So that's one thing. And also, the Guru, as is stated in Shastra, is the external manifestation of the Paramatma, the Super Soul. Right? He is the Chaitra Guru is in our heart, and externally comes the Guru. As Lord Chaitanya explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahmanda Konya Bhagya Vanji, Guru Krishna Prasadipai Bhakti Lata Bija. That the living entity is wandering from one Brahmanda to another Brahmanda. A Brahmanda means the lifetime of Lord Brahma. The lifetime of Lord Brahma is 311 trillion, 40 billion human years. That's a lot of births can take place in that length of time. And that we're not just one after the other. Millions of Brahmandas were wandering through. That's incredible. If you just think about it, it's just totally mind-boggling. When I first heard about the concept of reincarnation, I thought it was a good idea. Until I realized that up to that point in my life, it wasn't so great. And then the horror of the whole concept really sank in. So when you're thinking that you're going from one Brahmanda to the next, it's horror. So, but by the mercy of, if a soul is Bhagyavan Jeev, if he is the possessor of good fortune, which Srila Prabhupada explains means if he's sincere, good fortune in this case means if you're sincere, then Krishna sends you a guru. Krishna will send you a guru who is his representative, and that guru will plant in your heart the seed of devotion, the bhakti lata bija. And then it's up to you to water that seed. Because the words of the guru is Krishna speaking. One time, many years ago, I was leaving my apartment, I had to go, so there was a deadline. I didn't have time to chant my japa. For several days I didn't chant my japa. I was listening to many, many lectures of Srila Prabhupada, just one after the other, maybe 10, 15, 20 lectures a day. And I was thinking that normally if I miss my rounds, I feel terrible. But I was thinking, why? I'm feeling good, actually. I'm feeling pretty good. Just then, in the tape that I was listening to, Srila Prabhupada said, the words of the Guru is Krishna speaking to you. listening to Prabhupada's tape is actually a very mystical experience. That time I realized that many things, but that was one of the things. Srila Prabhupada, exactly. The words of the Guru is Krishna directly speaking to you. So this is another way that by meditating on the Guru, we can achieve this goal of seeing Krishna. And, of course, it's said that by one, yasya devi para bhaktir, yatha devi tatha guru, tasati katita hari artha, prakasante mahatmanaha. That one person who has complete faith in Guru and Krishna, then they will be able to understand the absolute. In their heart, the import of the Vedas will be revealed. So, it's very important, therefore, to be dedicated to the works, to following in the order of the spiritual master, which, as Vyasadeva explains, I think later on in the fourth chapter, in the fourth canto, that the order of the Guru is worshipable, is to be worshipped. Srila Prabhupada himself stated that when he was reading the commentary with the Bhagavad Gita by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that the order of the Guru must become the life and soul of the disciple, that's when Srila Prabhupada realized that this was not a joke. That he made it his life and soul to follow the order of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So, therefore, it becomes very extremely important for us to become dedicated to following in the footsteps. It says, following in the footsteps of the authority. So, Srila Prabhupada, the Guru Parampara. That is what Narada Muni, as a boy, he had been cursed to become a Shudra. So, as a boy, he served the Bhaktivedantas and he listened to their discussions while he was serving them, and then he followed their instructions. He followed in their footsteps. So there's a difference between following and imitating. We don't want to imitate, we want to follow. Imitating is a cause of much distress, of much problems, not just historically, but even in the present day in our society, that devotees sometimes they tend to think, there is a tendency to think that we are more advanced than we really are. And then this leads to major difficulties, catastrophes. Because sometimes when we read in Srila Prabhupada's books, we'll say, oh, the devotee is the most intelligent. Oh, that means me. I'm the devotee, right? So I'm the most intelligent. And it says about the neophyte devotees. Yeah. Or that other person over there. We have that tendency to think that we're more advanced. But actually, when Srila Prabhupada is writing in his books about the devotee, who is he speaking about? Is he speaking about me? Or is he speaking about Arjuna? Or Kunti? Or Prahlad? Or Parikshit? These are the devotees that generally Srila Prabhupada is speaking about. Because when Krishna's explaining in the Bhagavad Gita in the later chapter, he says, he gives the symptoms of my devotees, one of which is they never fall down. So I think that leaves out a lot of people. So generally Srila Prabhupada is meaning that. So we have to be very careful that we don't get into this trap of thinking that we're more advanced than we really are. Because as it's explained in this last paragraph, the humbleness of the pure devotee, who is 100% engaged in the service of the Lord, puts a devotee of the Lord in trance. So being humble, he doesn't think he's advanced. He doesn't get himself into that situation where he thinks he's more advanced. He thinks he's actually not advanced. So that you can never be too humble, It keeps you in a very safe position. One time, actually it was about in April of 2001, to illustrate this point, one sannyasi godbrother was giving a class, and he was pointing out how the Ritviks were saying that all the sannyasis in ISKCON had fallen down. And he pointed out, well, in my discussion with my other sannyasi godbrothers, we concluded that only about 41% had fallen down. And he was like, you know, very, you know, almost gloating on this point, you know, we didn't all fail. 41% fell down. But if you think about it, 41% is a disaster. In the military, 15% casualty rate is considered a disaster. When you speak of 41%, you know, the Americans have 150,000 troops in Iraq. If there was 41% casualty rate, that would mean 60,000 dead. They're complaining about 2,000 dead. 60,000 dead, there'd be a revolution in the U.S. So 41% is nothing to, you know, to be bragging about. So I put up my little finger, and I asked. I pointed out that in the Madhva Sampradaya, in the last 800 years, only two or three sannyasis had fallen down. Only two or three sannyasis had fallen down. So that ended that discussion. But is it that the Madhva sannyasis are so great? And when I first went, when I first came to India, I met Chidananda Swami. So in our primary discussion, he said he had met all the Madhva Acharyas, all the Ramanuja Acharyas, and he said immediately, none of them are on the level of Srila Prabhupada. But if they're not on the level of Prabhupada, why they're not falling down? But our men are falling down. Why? Because they have a social system which protects the sannyasis. They don't have women servants. They don't have women secretaries. They don't have women cooks. They don't have women masseuses, as one of our sannyasis who fell down had. Women masseuses. They protect the sannyasis. They understand the culture. As Bhakti Vidyapurna Swami is trying to teach us, the culture which makes it easy to perform, to act, to live the philosophy. You have to follow the religion. You know, philosophy without religion without philosophy becomes sentiment, becomes fanaticism. And philosophy without religion becomes speculation. That there's a religion of being there's a religion to be a brahmachari. There's a religion of being a grihastha. There's a religion of being a woman. There's a religion of being a sannyasi. So, getting to the point here, somebody might say, well, Srila Prabhupada had women secretaries, right? Srila Prabhupada had women cooks. Srila Prabhupada had female servants, right? But how many people, how many sannyasis have to fall down before we realize we can't imitate Srila Prabhupada? We can't imitate him. He was in a unique situation. As Abadi Narayan is famous for saying, Srila Prabhupada, often imitated, never duplicated. Not duplicate. You can't duplicate Srila Prabhupada. They broke the mold. But Brahma broke the mold. Because Srila Prabhupada also, he didn't have any other choices. He just came in onto the, you know, landed in the new world and having to establish a whole society from scratch. So he, as Srila Prabhupada himself said, in Haridwar in May of 77, in the beginning I had to do so many things in order to start the movement. Now we have to raise the standards. So we can't imitate what Srila Prabhupada did. Of course, Srila Prabhupada was also, you know, he was like a grandfather, and these girls are just like, you know, granddaughters, they're great-granddaughters even. In Bengali culture, girls are getting married at 15. That means by 30, they're grandmothers. Because their daughters are 15 and who are having children. So it means by the time you're 60, you're a great-great, you know, or 70. Prabhupada was pushing 80. When my godbrother's Mahabodhi was telling me how he was Srila Prabhupada's bodyguard here in the Lotus Building. And one time Srila Prabhupada's sister Pishima came to see Srila Prabhupada. So he's thinking, well, let me leave them alone, you know, maybe they want to have a talk or something. So he starts to walk, tiptoe out the door, and Prabhupada said, stopped him and says, where are you going? You can't leave me alone with a woman. Well, here they are, they're both, you know, septuagenarians. You know, their brother and sister, not only that, their godbrother and godsister, but he says, you can't leave me alone with a woman. He's trying to, you know, set a higher standard. So this is an important point. We can't imitate, we have to follow the instructions. As also illustrated in the life of Shankaracharya, in the Shankaracharya Digvijay, there is one incident where Shankaracharya was walking with his disciples through a village, and some Chandala woman, some pariah woman, some outcast lady, she recognizing a sadhu, she also wanted to get some benediction, so she offered him some sweet. So generally, people don't eat food which is offered by, specifically and very strict, there were smartas. You don't eat food offered by untouchable people. Even Lord Chaitanya, when he was traveling, he would only stay in the house of brahmanas who worshipped Shalagram Shila. Only ate that food. What to speak of somebody, who knows what this lady was doing. Anyway, Shankaracharya, he took a sweet and he ate it. So all the disciples saying, oh, Gurudev is eating, we also can eat. So they also started eating. So then Shankaracharya looked, he noticed that. Then he kept walking on the street and he saw a blacksmith shop. He walked into the blacksmith shop and there was a ladle of molten lead. He took the molten lead and he drank it and he said, who's next? Who's next, Because you're imitating. I could see her Atma. I could see her Atma. You could see her Atma? No, therefore don't take, don't imitate. Like that, he said. So that's another point, not to imitate, because we can't do what such great souls can do. We can't do what Srila Prabhupada did. Another point he's making is that the Lord is revealed not by one's speculative power, or by one's word jugglery, regarding the absolute truth, but rather he reveals it to the devotee who is fully satisfied by the devotee's, when he is satisfied by the devotee's service attitude, right? So, as one surrenders unto Krishna, he says, "I will." He reciprocates accordingly. It is by, one cannot enter into the spiritual world unless one develops a service attitude. The real standard, the test of our advancement is how much we develop a service attitude. This incident was demonstrated one time in the life of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One time the Vice Chancellor of Banaras Hindu University, Madan Mohan Malviya, came to see Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now you can imagine that this person, is a Vice Chancellor of the university, he was a very learned scholar. He came to see Bhakti Siddhanta. He said, I have some very intricate questions regarding Vedanta and I want you to answer. Bhakti Siddhanta refused to answer. I won't answer. You go into the pujari room and you ask the pujaris to answer your question. Ask them to answer your question. And the pujari said, well, we can't answer you now. We're busy washing the Lord's plates. So you help us wash the Lord's plates. At first he didn't want to go, but Bhakti Siddhanta insisted, you go. But out of humbleness and respect for Bhakti Siddhanta, he went. And, since he was there and they told him wash the plates, so he decided he washed the plates. He didn't say a word to them. And without asking any questions. Then he walked out. So Bhakti Siddhanta said, so, today were your questions answered? And then he replied, yes. While washing the plates, all the answers appeared in my mind. Because Krishna is in our hearts, isn't it? Sarvasya chaham hriday sanadishtam matha smritir jnanam apavanam cha vedaisya sarvam aham eva vedya vedantakrit vedavid eva chaham. That I am situated in the heart of all the living entities. From me comes knowledge, forgetfulness, and knowledge forgetfulness, and by all the Vedas am I to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. So, in his heart, when he is satisfied with the service rendered by the devotee, then Krishna reveals. As explained in the earlier portions of the Bhagavatam, that by process of devotional service, one develops all attachment and all knowledge manifests in the heart of the devotee. That Bhakti Siddhanta said, in that incident, Bhakti Siddhanta told Madan Mohan Malviya that my guru, He was illiterate, did not even know how to write his own name. But because he was totally surrendered to the Lord and offering him service, all the shlokas of the Vedas and the Upanishads came to his mouth because of his complete surrender to the Lord and his service attitude. So unless we are able to serve, you know, humbly through the instruction of the Guru, you know, that's the, you know, the abhidheya, serving or following the instruction of the Guru, then we only will be able to understand Krishna. This whole concept, this whole process is explained in the, or illustrated in the Mahabharata, in the Adi Parva, third chapter, that in the story, there's one incident explained of the Rishi named Ayodhya Dhaumya. Ayodhya Dhaumya had three disciples, Aruna, Upamandya, and Veda, right? He only had three disciples. So he told one of his disciples, Aruna, to go. There was he had a field, you know, but there was a breach in the river and the field was getting full of water. So he told him, you go to that field and you stop up the water. You stop the water from flowing. So Aruna Panchal, he went there and he noticed and he tried to figure out how to stop the water from coming into the field. And he couldn't see any other way except actually going into the breach himself and blocking the breach with his own body. He just, like, you know, he just blocked the hole with his body. And he didn't come back. And after some time, days, you know, the Guru, you know, the Guru said, well, where's the... He only had three disciples, so he noticed, you know. He didn't have like thousands of disciples yet. He only had three disciples, so he was noticing, you know, where's Aruna? Where is he? He says, well, you know, you told him yesterday, you told him to go and block that breach, and he's, you know, he's gone. He hasn't come back yet. So they said, well, let's go find him. Let's go find him. So they went out in the field, and they're calling, Aruna, where are you? You know, where are you? So hearing the words of his guru, he immediately, you know, got out of the hole, you know, and he paid, you know, and he paid his, I'm here, you know. I was blocking the hole, but now that I'm out, the water's coming in, but, you know, I was following your instructions. So his guru was so happy that he was following his instructions. He says, I'm very happy that you follow my instructions. Now, I bless you, that all the import of the Vedas will be revealed to you. You'll be very successful. Now you can go home. Your studies are finished. Because Rishi means one. The Vedas are revealed to those who, you know, they are able to actually see the Vedas. So his guru gave him that blessing. He was able to see the Vedas whenever he wanted to. So then he had another disciple. The other disciple, Upamanya, he told him, you should go take care of the cows. Go take care of my cows. And every evening, Upamanya would come back. And the guru was noticing, you're looking kind of fat. How are you supporting yourself? He says, well, every evening, I go out and beg, and I eat. And the guru said, what? You do that? No, that's totally off. It all belongs to me. This is unlawful what you're doing. Everything that you collect belongs to me, so you should offer it to me. So the disciple agreed that's correct. So the next day, he collected everything and he offered it to his guru. His guru didn't give him anything. He kept everything for himself. But then the guru was noticing, I see you're still fat. How are you supporting yourself? He says, well, after I beg the first time, I go out and beg a second time and I eat that. The guru said, no. This is totally unlawful. Don't do that. Stop this. So, but then, you know, the disciple agreed with the guru and he says, I won't do it anymore. So then he went out and took care of the cows. But the guru was noticing, how come I see you're still fat? So the disciple said, well, I drink the milk of the cows and keep. But the guru again chastised, you can't do that. Those cows belong to me. That milk is mine. How can you do this without my permission? It's unlawful. Stop this. So the disciple agreed, yes, you're right. I'm not doing the right thing. He stopped, you know. But then, you know, he went out and took care of the cows. And after some time, the guru noticing you're still fat. How are you living? He says, Well, the calves, after they drink the milk, they cough up some milk and they drink the froth. So that's how I'm living. And the guru says by seeing, you know, it's only out of sympathy that the calves are doing this, and they're probably coughing up more milk than they should, and now they're starving because of you. So stop doing this. Don't do this. You know, this is not the right way of supporting yourself. So the disciple agreed, you know, that you shouldn't do like this. So he went, you know, took care of the cows. Then the disciple was becoming very hungry. He became oppressed with hunger. He was starving because he couldn't, because guru, even if he begged, his guru wasn't giving him anything. He couldn't drink the milk. So he began to eat leaves. And began to eat the leaves of the arka tree. And the arka tree leaves are very bitter, very, you know, very poisonous. And by eating these leaves, he became blind. He became blind and he was crawling around. He fell into a well, into a hole. And, you know, the next day the guru was wondering, like, where is Upamandya? You know, it's his well, you know. The other said, well, you told him to go out, you know. And then, so then the guru was wondering, well, maybe he's so hungry, you know, he couldn't come back. So let's go find him. So they go out there calling his name, you know, where are you? Like, and finally they could hear, you know, hearing the guru's voice, you know, the disciples, you know, shouting from the hole. Says, I'm here, you know. So and they explain what happens. Well, I was so hungry, I ate these leaves, they poisoned me, I became blind. And the guru told him, well, you should recite the mantras from the Rig Veda glorifying the Ashwini Kumaras. The Ashwinis, they're celestial positions. They'll cure you. So you glorify them. So the disciple began to recite the Rig Vedic mantras, you know, and after some time the Ashwini Kumaras appeared. They were very happy with him. Says, here, eat these cakes. They offered him some, you know, with medicinal cakes. And the disciple says, no, I can't take them. You offer them first to my guru. And Ashwini Kumar says, no, we also appear for your guru. And he took these cakes, you should also take them. He says, no, I can't take these cakes. I'm sorry, I can't. You first offer them to my guru, I can't take them. So the Ashwini Kumars are very pleased with him. That, you know, and you know, we're very pleased with you. Says, and immediately they cured him. And they gave him so many benedictions. And the guru also, he was so pleased, you know, with his disciple that, you know, he wouldn't accept even the cakes of the Ashwini Kumaras unless it was offered to him first, that he blessed him. Says, your studies are finished. I bless you. Everything that the Ashwini Kumaras said will come true. The Vedas will be revealed to you. Everything is now revealed to you. Like that. And his third disciple, Veda, he said, I think you should stay in the ashram for some time. And he stayed in the ashram for a very long time, just serving his guru for a very long time. And this way he was tested. He had to become just a menial servant for years and years, decades. And finally the guru blessed him and he went. And this way, each disciple was tested in different ways. And when they passed the test, then the guru blessed them and the Vedas were revealed. Because they each strictly followed the order of their guru. Even up to the point of blindness, of going blind. Or the other one, he just stuck himself in the well to stop the water from going in. So by pleasing the guru like this, a qualified guru, then the blessings come. So how does this apply to us? We all are in the guru parampara. We all have to face many trials. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes comments in the 11th canto, 23rd chapter, the song of the Avanti Brahmana. He writes in the purport that, you know, because if anyone knows the song of the Avanti Brahmana, that this is one Brahmin who so many difficulties are brought to him. He loses all his wealth and he begins to think, you know, that this is a great blessing and becomes a complete mendicant, you know, just tolerating everything, his karma. But everybody then, they would urinate on his food, they'd throw all kinds of obnoxious things on him, feces, everything. They would just completely, you know, tie him up, beat him, but he just tolerated everything. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes that once a person begins to tread the path of devotion, so many thorns will be strewn in their path. And if because of this they begin to resent the Lord, then they will be then the progress in spiritual life will be destroyed. They simply have to tolerate it because they are being tested, just like the disciples Vayoda Dhamya. They were all being tested. So we will all be tested. There will be tests, there will be difficulties, there will be sacrifices, there will be rewards. There will be rewards. But, you know, that we have to be willing to spend every drop of our blood to fulfill the orders of our Guru. Because we have a very great responsibility. We are in the Guru Parampara. So we also will have students. We cannot be the weak link. We don't want to be the weak link. Krishna says in the fourth chapter of the Gita that, you know, this, according to the parampara, I taught this knowledge, but in due course of time, this knowledge was lost, and so I have to teach it again. So when I first read this, I was thinking, nah, this will never happen. You know, this won't happen in my... I couldn't contemplate how this somebody could do this, how somebody could break the parampara. But in our own lifetime, we're seeing so many people deviating. So many people are deviating from the pristine teaching of the parampara. So this could happen to us. By the grace, there but for the grace of God go I. The same thing could happen to us. We also could become deviated. So we don't want to be that weak link in the chain which breaks. So we have to become very strong. We have to become very fixed in the determination to follow the order of the Guru. Srila Prabhupada says that too. When I say every drop of blood, I don't mean like in some terrorist movement, you know. But in a letter in reference to Hayagriva, who had some problems, he said it takes gallons of blood to make a devotee. So they shouldn't be discarded so quickly. We should try to reform them. So we have to give every ounce of blood, you know, to fulfill the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to fulfill the orders, you know, to fulfill the mission of the Guru Parampara. Because if we don't do it, who will? If not now, when? You want to wait another lifetime? What are we going to be? What do you want to be doing in 10 million lifetimes from now? Do we want to still be around for 10 million more lifetimes? And, you know, Brahmanda after Brahmanda. So we have this, it's a dreadful responsibility that which we have. When we think about what we have, it's a dreadful responsibility. It's a very heavy responsibility. Repaying the debt to the Guru and the Guru Parampara. This knowledge, we just can't keep this knowledge hidden. We have, our duty is, just as we were, got the mercy of the Guru and the Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have to do the same thing. And this is how we will be rewarded. This is how we will be able to see Krishna. By this meditation, then we will be able to see Krishna. So, seeing as almost 9 o'clock, I think I'll officially end the class now. Anybody has any questions or comments? Yes, Guru. The second paragraph, what? There's an intimate relationship between the swan and the lotus stem. Yes. Well, swans eat lotuses. Swans eat something, right? So swans are always diving, looking for food, and they're looking for food in the stems of the lotus, the tender shoots. That's what swans they eat. So they always have their feet, that their head is always in the feet of the lotus. That's why that's what they're looking for. Well, this is the swans are always have their heads entangled in the feet of the lotus stem. Similarly, he wants that his mind is always entangled he wants the swan of his mind always entangled in the lotus feet of the Lord. Not that he's going to eat the lotus feet of the Lord like a swan is eating the roots of the lotus, but the, you know, in a more metaphorical way. Any other comments? Yes, Vandiji? Between the relationship between pratyaksha
and purified
well, the living entity, the soul, has spiritual senses, and then the material senses are the purified senses which are covered. So both of them are avenues, are there means of perception. So, for example, when Dhruva Maharaj was perceiving the Lord in the heart, he was perceiving with what? With purified senses. But then, when then all of a sudden the Lord disappeared from inside his heart, and he was shocked, and he opened his eyes, and what did he see? He saw the Lord outside. So he was able to see both, with both, because now his material senses were also pure. So the Lord is covered. When this, we cannot see the Lord when the material senses cover the spiritual senses. Did that answer your question? Yes, Mataji? So, to repeat the question, Mataji was saying that I had said that the order of the spiritual master is the most important thing. It's worshipable, it has to be followed. But as we've seen in history, that some gurus have fallen down, so how, you know, what should we do? So the principle which we follow is guru, sadhu, and shastra. Except that the order, though we say that, the order is wrong. It should be the other way around. In order of importance, shastra is the most important. So the word shastra stems from the Sanskrit dhatu of weapon, the same, astra, like that. So the shastra is meant to control us and so that we can do the right thing. So a guru is only a guru if he follows the shastra. An acharya is only an acharya if he follows the shastra. A sadhu is only a sadhu if he's following the shastra. So, if the order is not in accordance with shastra, then the disciple has a legitimate right to question. But one has to be careful. For example, one time, Srila Prabhupada tells us how he was here in Mayapur at the yoga pit, and a snake was found. And Bhakti said, the order immediately should be killed. Prabhupada was wondering, sadhu is ordering a snake, a living entity, to be killed. How is it possible? He had this doubt came in his heart. But this is, seems to be contrary to how a saintly person should behave. He had this doubt. But because he was reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and eventually he came to the seventh canto, and he read how Prahlad said to Nrisimha that even the saintly persons are happy if a serpent or a scorpion is killed, a poison. Then his doubt was removed. And then he realized actually there was no contradiction. So sometimes there is a problem. Sometimes the problem is with us. The only way we can know is if we also are reading the shastras, if we're also following, then we can discern.
And if there's some question, of course, Srila Prabhupada, I don't think he didn't say discuss with anybody, but he was resolved by reading, the continued reading of the Shastras. Because unless we read the Shastras, we won't know, it just becomes sentimental. Sentimental. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada was quoting Jiva Goswami from the Sundarbhas, that he said that Bhakti Yoga means actions performed after realization of Vedanta. Otherwise, it's just sentimentality. It becomes just sentimental. Sentimentality, he said, sentiment has some value, but it's just that. So it won't give you the right realization. So it has to be done, actions performed with knowledge. When I was first a devotee, I was a cook. And so I had a senior guard brother who was my assistant. And I would, I was reading every day. In my spare time, 2 hours I had to read. And I said, oh, you should, I was encouraging him to read. He said, no. Just want to serve. And I said, well, if you don't read, after a while you'll forget why you're serving. And sure enough, that's what happened. He forgot why he was serving. After a while, this became a difficulty for him. So both have to be there, It's a multi-level process. Many different, it's not just a one-dimensional process. Did that answer your question? Yes, Prabhu. Grace of Guru, and also our main weapon in did everybody hear what he said? Can you repeat what you said louder? Everybody hear what? Anyway, the main weapon that we have one of the main weapons that we have for advancing your spiritual life is the two instructions, one of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, Matra, Sparsha, Sukanteya, Satoshna, Sukha, Bukada. That we have to learn how to tolerate it and not be disturbed. And then, what is it? The verse, in the third verse of the Shikshastika, which I just forgot now. But one has to be more tolerant in a tree, more humble in a blade of grass. So again, tolerance. Tolerating even our own inability, tolerating our own weaknesses, the frustrations we have to tolerate. We have to tolerate ourselves, but just speak of tolerating everybody else, to tolerate our own mind. But if we can tolerate these things and continue on anyway, as Lord Brahma prays, if we simply tolerate that soul who humbly serves you while tolerating his own past karma. It's the reaction of his past karma. To that, such a person, liberation becomes his birthright. So tolerating. It's tolerating ourselves, tolerating our bodies, tolerating our mind, tolerating other people is our weapon. And if we simply tolerate it, eventually the problem goes away. Because we're eternal, problems are temporary. Isn't it? We are eternal. By chanting the holy name, we associate with Krishna. And by associating with Krishna, we develop our qualities back. So one of those qualities is sat. We're eternal. We realize our own eternal nature, and then it's easy to tolerate things because we know, I'll still be here and the problem will be gone. Nobody is worrying about the tests. Their high school exam now. Then they were worrying. Vice President, who's that? The Vice President of the United States, Democrat said, because they were commenting about how
there's no prayer in school. And he says, as long as there's exams in school, there will be prayer in school. Because we're trying to overcome a difficulty. But nobody now, you know, so many years after high school, is worrying about those difficulties. Because we passed that. We outlived the difficulty. So if we just can project ourselves into the future, and we look back, and we're not worried about the difficulty now, then, so we just come back and say, well, why should we be worried about it now? It doesn't mean we don't do something about it, but why give out? Just, you know, we're eternal. Problems are not eternal. Yes, Guru? Yeah. In regards to Varnashram?
For example, when there are some controversies, when you see the both parties and the
Varnashram. In the beginning of the Shabha Parva of the Mahabharata, Narada Muni is introduced. And one of the qualities of Narada Muni, which is glorified, is that he had the capacity of reconciling contradictory statements in the Shastras. So, first of all, it indicates that there are apparent contradictory statements in the Shastra. They're only apparent because if one has sufficient understanding, one can reconcile them. You mentioned the example of Varnashram. So Srila Prabhupada, he would often, you know, he would glorify Varnashram, and then he would say, oh, it can't be done. Right? So he did that for many years. So if somebody would say, if they would, you know, somebody says Varnashram has to be done, and then they would, somebody looks in folio and says some past statement where Srila Prabhupada said, oh, it can't be done. So that will be the counter argument. But as Srila Prabhupada explains in the Gita, that it's the final instruction which is the more important instruction. So many instructions may have been given before, but the final instruction is the important one. You know, the conclusion. So similarly, in this case, as you mentioned, Varnashram, what was Prabhupada's statement? So in February 1477, here in Mayapur, the discussion came up about Varnashram, right? It was Harishwari, Satswarup, and Srila Prabhupada. I remember it because when I was here, Bhakti Satswarup was reading from his notes, his diary, and he was discussing this thing. So Srila Prabhupada said the same thing. He said Varnashram should be instituted. So Harishwari and Satswarup, they were arguing with Srila Prabhupada. They were using all the arguments that Srila Prabhupada actually said to discount Varnashram that he had stated in the previous 6 years. They were exactly saying the same thing that Prabhupada had said back to Srila Prabhupada. In a humble way, because that's what they heard from him. And they were like, but how is it Guru is now saying the opposite, you know? But then Srila Prabhupada, he said, no, it has to be done. And he said, well, outside, an external community, and external, it's like, well, the Prabhupada said, no, in ISKCON itself. And they were giving different arguments. Oh, well, we're just supposed to, you know, we just could just chant Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada said, they're not even chanting their 16 rounds. Don't try to, they can't even, what is it, imitating Haridas Thakur? They can't even chant their 16 rounds. Like that. And then, finally, they came to the point, says, our sannyasis are falling down. In the Veda base says unnamed, you know, the name blocked out, unnamed sannyasi is falling down. So that's the one, because it's, you know, the devotees are not, as it says, Vaishnava is not a cheap thing. Vaishnava is not a cheap thing. That was what Satsuki was stressing in the in the talks out in the Ganga. Prabhupada said, Vaishnava is not a cheap thing. Prabhupada said, we cannot call ourselves devotees. The most that we can say is that we're servants, not devotees. It's not a cheap thing to be a devotee. That's like Prahlad, you know.
Arjuna, Kunti, the Gopi, they're devotees. We, the most we can say is we're just servants. So here, Srila Prabhupada had made statements, which a devotee, then Prabhupada changed this course. The devotees used Srila Prabhupada's own arguments in discussion with him, and then Prabhupada countered them. That's the last thing that he, this is the final instructions, seeing that the situation was changed. So in establishing, in this kind of discussion, any type of dialectic like you're saying, not necessarily the topic of any kind of discussion, it's unless you're quoting directly from Shastra, then they're quoting according to statements that the Guru said. But then you have to take all the statements in a chronological order and seeing what the ultimate conclusion was and what's the final statement. Because if you read in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes so many recommendations, but then at the end he counteracts all of them and saying, this is what you should do. He gives different options for different people. And even in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, just be my pure devotee. But if you can't do that, then follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. If you can't do that, then work for me. If you can't do that, then cultivate knowledge. If you can't do that, then do this. Now somebody may say, well, Krishna says just cultivate knowledge. And that's what they're going to do. It's right there in the Shastra. But what's the ultimate? So everything has to be. So this process of hermeneutics, it's called, in Western academia, it's called hermeneutics. The process of understanding scriptures in Veda culture is called mimamsa. How to actually understand the scriptural ordinances. There are certain rules of logic and precedents. For example, if there's a contradiction between one shastra and another shastra, there's a way of reconciling it. For example, if there's a statement in the Shruti that's contradicted by a statement in the Smriti, then what is said in the Shruti has precedence than what it says in the Smriti. So there's different ways of dealing with this. So there is a process of how to properly deal. And everything has to also be consistent. Consistency has to be there. This is the problem with the Ritviks. The Ritviks take one statement and they twist it out of proportion. But as is explained in Vedanta Sutra, that there has to be what is known as Shastra Sangiti. There has to be consistency of any one sloka has to be consistent with all of the slokas in that chapter. And it has to be consistent with all the slokas in that canto. It has to be consistent with all the slokas in the whole book. It has to be consistent with the whole body of knowledge. You just can't take things out of context. So that's called Shastra Sangiti. Many different levels of consistency has to be there. But in Ritvik, everything is totally inconsistent. They make something, like when I was studying math when I was in university. So, humorists amongst mathematicians, they would sometimes publish, some mathematical, system of mathematical equations, all different types of calculus. And at the end, 1 = 0. And he made a mistake somewhere. You have to try to figure out that where did he make the mistake, because ultimately, the answer is absurd. It's not consistent with everything that's known in mathematics. 1 cannot be equal to 0. So that's what they've done. They've taken something, made it totally inconsistent. It's not consistent. Everything in Krishna's Vedic culture is consistent with everything else. Like Ayurveda, astrology, all the shastras, everything is consistent. It's a network of paths leading to Krishna. It's like in Latin, there's a saying, tutti strada via Roma, all roads lead to Rome. So in the Vedas, all the paths lead back to Krishna. So in astrology, it says that the sun is the right eye of the Kalapurusha and the moon is the left eye. Right? Krishna says the same thing in the Gita. It says the same thing in the Upanishads. Everything is interconnected. All the tattvas, all the dravyas, the panchabhutas, the same thing which is mentioned in Sankhya Yoga, the same thing which is in astrology, the same thing which is in Ayurveda. It's all all consistent. So any argument like this has to be consistent with the ultimate goal. Like one of the things they'll say is, oh, Varnashram is external, right? Because that discussion with Lord Chaitanya from another voice said Varnashram is external, but therefore it's unnecessary. But if you read all of the subsequent verses, Lord Chaitanya says what is external, the Bhagavad Gita is also external. Because Ramananda quotes so many verses of the Bhagavad Gita, and he says that that's also external, including what he describes as devotional service in the Bhagavad Gita, that's all external. So therefore we should disregard Bhagavad Gita. So just take one thing and just focus on that out of context, then you can turn one into zero. You can reduce it to an absurdity. You know, reductio ad absurdum. That was a method of mathematical proof. You take something to its logical conclusion until it becomes an absurdity, and you prove that the previous theorem is not correct. You know, reductio ad absurdum. That's what happens. Anything else? Jai Shrimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj Ki Jai.